Great.
Cool.
Welcome, everyone.
My name's Derek Asoka. I'm a program manager on the remote desktop services team.
And I'm Winston Johnston. I'm an engineering manager for the RemoteFX Virtual GPU. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And today we're here to talk to you about the investments we're making in the next version of Windows in the remote desktop services product. So Winston and myself, we're actually based down in the Mountain View campus in Silicon Valley. The rest of the team is mostly based out of Redmond, but together we work to ship a bunch of solutions in Windows. What everyone essentially in the room should be familiar with is the remote desktop protocol, which essentially allows you to remote to another Windows machine. So that's one of the things we ship. And then down in the Mountain View campus, we now own all the clients that we've now shipped through the different app stores on iOS and Android. So we support all Windows, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, and Mac clients, and those still use our RDP protocol to connect back to Windows machines. In addition to that, we also have VDI components that we ship, and these span both remote desktop session hosts and remote desktop virtualization. Today, what we'll be focused on is VDI, so the RDVH, a remote desktop virtualization host role. And also, of course, remote desktop session hosts. This is session desktops and remote applications. And there's a new service that the team is also now building called Azure Remote App, which essentially allows you to upload an image into Azure, which essentially allows you to also get remote desktop applications served down to you through either one of the clients that we ship through the different stores. So Windows, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, and Mac. So today, what we'd like to talk to you about, as I mentioned earlier, were the investments we've made in the next version of Server. I'd like, at least by the end of the session, for you to walk away understanding the different graphics virtualization options that are available in VDI. And what we'll cover are not just the ones that Hyper-V supports, but others that are in the industry today that Citrix and VMware and NVIDIA support. In addition to that, really precipitate the value that we've added in VDI on top of Hyper-V. So understand the expansive application workloads that we support today with the new investments that we've made. Winston will go through some graphics configuration options. So what we've done is, in addition to supporting new workloads, we've added some tweaks to allow you to configure a VDI virtual machine to enable these applications to really shine on top of Hyper-V. We'll go through a set of demos today, so we'll show a lot of applications with the goal of making sure that you can see that it's not just, you know, a select set of applications that work for the new workloads, but really a different categories of designer, engineering, and desktop type applications that you can deploy in a VDI environment. Okay. So without much further ado, we'll start talking about GPU virtualization. So there are really four major areas that you'll get for GPU virtualization. The first one that's really common for everyone is what's called software GPU, or WARP. And essentially what that is a virtual machine on top of Hyper-V that gets hardware acceleration, in quotes, through a CPU. And that essentially means that all the capabilities that you get from a graphics perspective are whatever the CPU supports, which typically are very different from a dedicated virtual or a dedicated GPU. There's this new kind of architecture that NVIDIA is supporting called device assignment. And what this means is, with some integration that they've added with the other virtualization platforms like ESX and Zen Server, what you're able to get is assigning an individual hardware GPU to an individual virtual machine. Okay. So that means essentially you install the NVIDIA driver in a virtual machine, and through some integration with a hypervisor, that virtual machine is able to use that driver it has to communicate with a dedicated graphics adapter. As you can see from the image, what you really get is a one-to-one mapping between a GPU and a virtual machine. Okay. The next one is also something that NVIDIA supports today. Incidentally, they call this vGPU as well. However, the difference is that they're able to take a physical GPU, and because they make the hardware, they're able to partition it, essentially take a physical function in a GPU and turn it into a virtual function. So one GPU can have, let's say, four virtual GPU adapters mapped to it. And what that means is you're able to take one virtual machine and assign it to a virtual GPU that NVIDIA allows you to. And how they expose this really is through different profiles in the hypervisor. So you could essentially say this GPU, let's say, gets a profile, 140Q, and that means it gets, let's say, 1 gigabyte of video memory, or this GPU gets, K100Q, and that's 256 megabytes of video memory. Okay? And then the last one is power virtualization. And this is something that we do, and also VMware and Citrix do. However, this really what it does is you have a synthetic adapter that's exposed in a virtual machine, and that synthetic adapter has its own drivers that talk to a physical GPU running on the host system. So, this really is the landscape of graphics options that you have in VDI. Now, they each have different attributes. So what we thought would be really interesting to share is how each of these architectures exposes itself based on these attributes. As you can see, we have performance, application compatibility, scale, which is really important to consider, especially these, because a server class GPU is very, very expensive. We have overallocation of GPUs, so essentially, when you have a one-to-one mapping, are you able to utilize the investments you have in a GPU? And then cost per VM. And of course, really most importantly, do you have any flexibilities around the hardware that you can deploy in your data centers if you do want to go with VDI? So as you can see here, with software GPU, essentially your performance is low. Why? Because there's really no hardware acceleration experience provided by a GPU. Your app compatibility also varies, but it's typically on the lower end side because some applications really do some detection. Even PowerPoint does detection and says, you know what, we actually detect that we can't do some transitions because of your GPU capabilities. You'll notice that the scale is also low, and that, of course, is once you're running on top of a hypervisor, the CPU is being used for everything at that stage. So there's no hardware offload. There is no overallocation. The cost per VM is also very low because essentially you have no hardware assigned, or you don't have to spend $5,000 to $10,000 on a GPU, and you can go with whichever processor you want. Device assignment really, based on the architectures you can see here, gives you very good performance. You get also really great app compat because what you do see is with the vendor driver and some of the certification that the applications go through, that really gives you a really good idea of what you can get. However, the scale is very low because you have a one-to-one mapping. That means a server chassis can only take so many GPUs and can only consume so much power. So it really is a limiting factor, and there is no overallocation. Meaning, if someone goes home and they're assigned to a physical GPU and they're using that environment, you can't use that GPU on another virtual machine. And of course, the cost per VM is also very high, and because this is a technology that only NVIDIA supports, you're essentially locked into NVIDIA. You can't use, let's say, an AMD GPU. Okay. Device virtualization also has almost the same attributes. You do get better scale because of the partitioning, and depending on your needs, you really can tweak which VM gets what performance depending on the workload that virtual machine needs. There is no overallocation, and the cost per VM is, you'd say medium depending on how many VMs. So for example, on an NVIDIA grid card, you can only get, let's say, up to 16 VMs. So there is a limit there. And of course, you have to use NVIDIA hardware for this. What we have is power virtualization, as I mentioned. And what you get here in terms of performance and app compatibility is a really good balance in the sense that it's not a vendor driver, but we go through the same certifications that the vendors go through in terms of compatibility in Windows, compatibility with the Windows driver model, and that really accrues to what experience you can expect your users to get. Scale from some of the initial tests we've done with the previous versions of RemoteFX, we see scale up to the hundreds of VMs. So you really do get bang for your buck when it comes to the cost per VM. The importance of power virtualization as well is through our load balancing and allocation algorithms, you do get the benefit of over-allocation, meaning if one user isn't doing anything, they really don't have to do anything with that GPU, and another user can actually go ahead and use as much of that GPU as they want. Okay. And so, you know, we have algorithms that manage that over-allocation. And because we're vendor agnostic, that means any GPU in the host really doesn't need a specific GPU in the driver. We have our own drivers in the VM. You can use any hardware vendor that you choose. So Winston will kind of go through some of the demo hardware we have, but it could be anything from an integrated AMD or Intel APU to a dedicated or discrete NVIDIA or AMD GPU, okay? And so really to recap, those are the two things that exist in Hyper-V today. So you get software if you'd like to go that way. So if someone's doing just Office, for example, you know, you'd really want to, you know, not over-allocate resources to them. But if you have users who require a little bit more of a hardware-accelerated experience, if they're using something like Photoshop or an engineering or designer application, then you do have the capability of using that, of using power virtualization. Okay. So just as a quick recap, you do have two choices with RemoteFX for graphics. We looked at software rasterization. And to recap, you know, this gives you a limited amount of 3D capabilities in a virtual machine. You do get tremendous scale, optimized for, you know, people who, let's say, just use Office and web and internal line of business applications. Great for that if you're playing YouTube videos, but doing, you know, really nothing sophisticated from an application perspective. And the important thing to note here is it's limited to DX. RemoteFX vGPU, what we do give is a true hardware-accelerated experience. And we'll go through some of the investments in detail that we've made. However, what you do get is DX, you get OpenGL, OpenCL in a VDI environment. And as you can see, you get the best performance for 3D, the best experience, so applications that need access to a GPU give you a full experience in terms of animations, transitions, or any type of rendering capabilities that are required. And then in terms of the options on top of Hyper-V, what you get is the best application compatibility, okay? So some unique benefits of these are covered, but, you know, what we do observe when we talk to customers is the cost of having different certifications added on top of your VDI environment. So everything we do is just built into Windows. And so as we go through the demos today, what you'll notice is that the management and deployment and configuration, you know, comes for free in Windows. So you really don't have to get any additional software applications or certifications to actually deploy on top of Windows for this. So, you know, we give you free algorithms for placement, memory management, and we've also invested in a lot of performance counters if you'd like to see, let's say, individual VM performance or memory mapping in a virtual environment. And then what customers also tell us that's really critical is these GPUs are very expensive. And as, you know, what we see in terms of conversations is customers would say, yeah, we really would like to provide a hardware-accelerated experience in VDI. However, Vendor X has, you know, two times the cost when it comes to the cost of a GPU. Do we have any other options? So really, providing a solution that is vendor agnostic has a lot of value because not everyone has the same budget when it comes to what they can invest in VDI. And sometimes the needs vary in regard to the application workloads that you'd like to support. So, you know, as we go through the demos today, what you'll see is we're using integrated Intel GPUs to actually go through some of our demos. But when we actually do our scale and application testing, we use very expensive GPUs. However, depending on what your users need, it's really good to tease the benefits and the value that you can get without really having any lock-in to a specific vendor. And then, as I mentioned, it's something that we've consistently improved with our releases. And our goal is to always move closer or as much as we can to our what's called session host solution, which can scale to about 300 VMs. So what we're observing with some improvements we've made is we're getting closer to that. But really what we'd like to tell customers is configurations can allow to over 100 VMs. It depends on the server that you buy and, you know, around memory and SSDs and essentially how you configure your server. But the basic configurations that we test with, we get numbers over 100. Okay, and this really is a unique benefit when you think of how many users, let's say, you want to deploy with GPUs and the cost, really, that it takes to have one GPU, let's say, locked into 4 or 5 users when you can do over-allocation. That really, really bites into how you can scale a VDI solution, okay? And then most importantly, what we've invested in this version of Windows is making sure that really we won't get feedback from customers telling us, well, you know what, you only support DX. I really can't do other types of applications like Photoshop, or type of applications that designers mostly and engineers need that aren't really DX-based, okay? So at this point, I'll let Winston talk through system requirements for running in a remote effects vGPU environment.
Okay, so for the remote effects virtual GPU, we're talking about a virtualized graphics solution. And so that means that we're taking a dependency on the virtualization stack within Windows and Windows Server. So that's Hyper-V. Hyper-V runs on a lot of different SKUs in Windows now. It's available on Windows Enterprise and Windows Professional. When it comes to RemoteFX virtual GPU, we do have a dependency on Windows Server. So when it comes to some hardware requirements, basically you need a 64-bit processor, hardware-assisted virtualization, hardware data execution prevention. These are just standard requirements, really, for Hyper-V, but obviously, you know, we take a dependency on those. We're in, I think, our fourth release for RemoteFX virtual GPU at this point, and since the beginning, we've had a dependency on a CPU feature called SLAT, or second-level address translation. The Hyper-V team have actually promoted this to a requirement for all Hyper-V installations with Windows Server Next and Windows 10. However, of course, the unique thing about RemoteFX Virtual GPU is that we do need a physical GPU installed in the machine, and that can be a workstation class or server class GPU. We do have a minimum set of requirements for that GPU. For example, we do require DX11.0 or later, OpenGL 4.0 or later, and WDDM, that's the Windows Display Driver model, WDDM 1.2 or later. But as Eric touched on before, we support a variety of different GPU manufacturers. So the vGPU is really very simple to configure and manage. RemoteFX Virtual GPU is part of the Remote Desktop Virtualization Host role. That's the VDI role service that I'll show you how to install in a second. It's available on Windows Server Standard, Windows Server Data Center. One of the things that's different between Windows Server and Windows Enterprise is that Windows Server doesn't install the graphics or display device drivers for you automatically. So you need to get those drivers from either the OEM that that built the server, or download them directly from the IHV, Intel, NVIDIA, AMD, whoever it is. We're going to walk through in the demo some options that you have for selecting which GPUs you want to use with VDI. These options are available through the Hyper-V user interface, but also through PowerShell, and we'll touch a little bit on both of those. The idea here is that if you have multiple GPUs or multiple graphics adapters in the machine, our solution can scale and dynamically load balance across the available hardware. So also, RemoteFX virtual GPU is an opt-in virtual device for these generation one virtual machines under Hyper-V. So we'll show you how to actually add it to a VM and get going. Okay, time for the first demo. So the first thing I wanted to show you is just a little bit about the demo rigs that we're using today. These are really quite simple devices, and Derek and I opted to use these because it was easy for us to ship them over with us from California. But you know, they really are only fairly small devices. Maybe you can see the one Derek's holding up here. The hardware is solid-state drives, which one of the great advantages is that Hyper-V VMs power on very quickly with the solid-states. We have an Intel Iris Pro integrated GPU that's on die with the Intel i7 processor. So hopefully you'll see that the performance and experience is really quite good with these simple little devices that cost less than $1,000. Okay. So this is our virtualization host running Hyper-V. And I've already configured this machine to use RemoteFX virtual GPU, and I've deployed the RDVH role. But it's really very simple to actually get going. From Server Manager, run the add roles and features wizard, choose a role-based or feature-based installation, just kind of follow through the wizard and, you know, select Hyper-V, expand remote desktop services, select remote desktop virtualization host, and then just complete the wizard. Windows will need to reboot to finish installation of the hypervisor and so on, but it really only takes a few minutes to do. And as long as you've installed the drivers for the video card, say, for example, like what I've done here, as you can see, I've got my Intel Iris Pro integrated graphics. Hyper-V will be able to pick up that device. So let me just show you some of the dialogues within Hyper-V settings. Once you've enabled the remote desktop virtualization host role within Hyper-V Manager, you'll get this additional dialog here that allows you to see what physical GPUs are available. And if you had, say, an NVIDIA Grid K1 device, you'd actually see, you know, four different adapters in this list of GPUs. And through the UI, you can actually opt out some GPUs that you might not want to use. So this is kind of beneficial if, for example, you have a mix of GPUs in your machine and there are some that you really don't want to use for virtualization. Okay. So just switching over to PowerShell. It's all of this stuff is scriptable, so it's just as simple as importing the Hyper-V module. Fat fingers. Import module Hyper-V. Okay. And get VM remote effects. Okay, so this get VM remote effects physical video adapter PowerShell commandlet, it's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's part of the Hyper-V module. And with this, you can actually get a list of all the GPUs that are in the system, pretty much the same as what you just saw in the UI. The interesting thing here is that the state of the GPU is enabled, and we have some other PowerShell commands that'll allow you to toggle that state. Okay. We also have a commandlet for adding the virtual GPU. To a particular VM. So my VM name is RFX Demo VM2. But what's going on if I already added it?
Just turn it off. You have to turn it off.
Oh, thanks, Derek. Yeah, sorry, you can't add the device. You can't change the virtual hardware configuration while the VM's running. So, yeah, you can add it, and then I want to leave this guy in a state where it's removed for the next demo. Okay, that concludes the first demo.
Okay, so what's new in the next version of Windows? When it comes to graphics. So we had a really vocal set of customers that have been giving us some feedback. And some things we heard that really bubbled to the top were around application compatibility. So we invested a lot in making sure that if you're running an application, whether it's DX or whichever other graphics API it's using, that there is really no compatibility issues. And different applications do different things. So there's a plethora of ways that applications can look at the registry or a device and say, this is what I'm looking for to determine what graphics capabilities are available for me. So what we did was really tease, test a lot of applications, talk to a lot of software vendors to understand what are they looking for. And in addition to that, we also made some specific investments around how you can configure a virtual machine to enable it to be a graphics workstation.
Okay.
And customers also told us that, you know, what they observe is, you know, Windows is Windows, and so when someone's remoting to a VDI environment, they really don't have to consider that the experience needs to degrade. So making sure that the performance and the end-to-end experience was almost native was also a very, very big goal for us. So the feedback specifically was that end users shouldn't have to tell that when I run an application, let's say Office, or a graphics application like AutoCAD locally, or if I'm remoting, and I'm providing that in a VDI environment that, you know, I notice that, you know, there are lags or there's some issues. So that was a big goal for us, and something customers talked to us about. And then lastly, that was really thematic is we had one customer who was is in education, and you know they said, well, you know what we love about RemoteFX is it's great, it's very easy to configure, it's fabulous in terms of the performance of the applications that they wanted to use. However, if they got a new application that let's say used a different set of graphics APIs, they essentially were stuck, and they said, well, we can't deploy this in a Hyper-V VDI environment, and that essentially meant that they needed separate environments or deployment paradigms just to deal with an individual application or another set of applications. So essentially, our goal was to make sure that in this version of Windows, we can unblock anyone who wants to run any type of application in a VDI environment. So essentially, really remove any blockers around what type of workloads can I run in a VDI environment. So over the years, actually, RemoteFX was an acquisition called Calista into Microsoft around around before 2008 R2, the 2008 R2 release. And over the years, it's matured in the capabilities that have gone into it. So after acquisition, of course, make it, you know, compatible with the Microsoft Hyper-V platform and get it up to a certain level of DX at that time, which is DX9. And over the years, increasing the performance and compatibility for DX, as you can see, it's gone from DX9 to DX11.1, and really now making it type of a performant environment. And this meant, you know, making sure that you can run in a different session, a VM Connect session, or a console session, rather, that allows you to get really great performance. Added a lot of features around GPU management, memory management, and also over time, really simple things like addressing greater resolutions as people moved from, 1024, 768 resolution monitors now to around, 4K or even twice 2K resolutions. Another big investment that the team has made, and we've actually got a lot of benefits from this, is making sure that we're conformant. So if it's the hardware compatibility kit that other vendors use to be compatible in Windows, we go through the same certification as well to make sure that we really aren't cheating the system, even though we are, part of Windows. We still subject ourselves to some of those certifications. So in ServerNext, some of the things we've done specifically are increase our API set. So now we, it's taken us almost over a year now to start from zero, essentially a state of zero, to support OpenGL and OpenCL APIs. And so that really goes back to the state of saying, can you run any application in a Microsoft Hyper-V environment? One specific thing we also learned as we started testing specific applications and talking to specific vendors like Adobe was that they said, well, yeah, you can support OpenGL. However, what we do want is still to be able to diagnose an environment and say, can we provide basic performance for an application, or can we provide advanced performance based on the capabilities that have? So, essentially, what we've done is increased the amount of dedicated virtual video memory that you can get. So now you can essentially tweak and say, yes, I want to give a graphics workstation to a user, but maybe the applications they need only need, let's say, 256 megabytes. Or there's a specific designer who has an application that, let's say, needs a gigabyte of video memory. So we're able to tease apart small things like these that really make a really good experience. We also now support 4K resolutions, which is a big deal in the sense of what's actually happening through the hypervisor and through RDP to really push all the bits to support a 4K experience in a virtual environment. And then another thing we'll also show today are things which are really intangible, but the performance. So we've invested a lot in saying, well, talking to customers and saying, well, if you were to evaluate a Hyper-V VDI environment, what type of benchmarks would you run? So we ran some of those benchmarks, and that's really what's been the North Star for us. So we've made a lot of improvements around performance as well. So what the improvements enable, and of course this is, why did we do this is, saying now you can do design or engineering applications in a Microsoft VDI environment. And the specifics around this is making sure we have the right API sets. So now you can go from essentially OpenGL 1.0 to 4.4. OpenGL, of course, revs their versions every 6 months. So by the time, really that we were kind of locking down the technical preview that you could download today, we were at version 4.4. So that's one thing. We also looked at the set of applications that we wanted to support, and some of them needed OpenCL API support. So we support today up to OpenCL 1.1. And as I talked about, essentially, we had this tricky way in which, when you're using remote effects, you had to know that you had to use two monitors at a specific resolution to get a specific amount of video memory. What we've done is we've decoupled that, and now you can just individually say, regardless of whether I'm using a 4K monitor or 1900 by 1200 resolution, I just want a specific amount of video memory for this virtual machine. So that's really useful for the flexibility that some of our customers wanted. And I had a list of example applications, but through our demos, we'll go through some of these applications and some more as well, just to show you what the experience is like. And of course, you know, what we'll also show today is the improvements we've made around rendering through frames per second, essentially what the presents that you can see from an application, and really reducing the jitter, which really is what users can see when they're interacting in a virtual environment. So some of the demos we'll go through today, you'll be able to see that. Under the hood, we've improved our VM to host transport, so we've kind of standardized it and gone with a new Hyper-V way of doing it through VMbus, and as I mentioned earlier, really making sure that our app compat is also up to par. That makes the experience very, very good. So I'll let Winston kind of take the next section, and he'll talk about details on OpenGL and OpenCL.
Okay. So I suppose OpenGL is something that has not had a lot of support in remote desktop solutions from Microsoft. It's, you know, I think probably around the Windows Vista timeframe, Microsoft really started to invest heavily in DirectX, and there's been a lot of revisions of DirectX since then. And not too much happening in OpenGL. And I guess a byproduct of that was that from the remote desktop organization's perspective, we didn't do a lot to enable OpenGL in solutions like remote desktop session host, or indeed even just remoting between two PCs. You know, OpenGL is not available. What Derek and I are talking today, though, about in terms of OpenGL and OpenCL support is that we've added this specifically to our VDI solutions for RemoteFX virtual GPU. Without the RemoteFX virtual GPU, you'll get an OpenGL 1.1 software rasterization. Okay. In terms of the supported configuration, again, this requires the Windows Server Next host. But in terms of the guest, we have some flexibility. Traditionally, we've only supported VDI with Windows Enterprise. But based on some feedback from some partners, we've in fact expanded that to include support for Windows Server Next Standard as a guest. So that has some implications for hosting scenarios. It's relevant to licensing. The final point I probably want to make about OpenGL and OpenCL is that these are standards for 3D graphics and for compute that have been developed by industry consortiums. So it's very different to say, you know, a company like Microsoft just coming up and owning the full API. OpenGL in particular is vast. Derek said that we've implemented support up to OpenGL 4.4, and that's really about 2,000 APIs and language extensions just to get the application compatibility up there. So we have had some help from Kronos, which is the governing body for OpenGL and OpenCL, with some conformance tests that they make available to IHVs like NVIDIA and AMD. Actually, most of the test suites have been developed by the likes of NVIDIA and AMD. But they've shared them with us, and that's really helped us to bring up the quality of our paravirtualization for OpenGL and OpenCL. Okay. Time for another demo. And this is something that I'm really excited to show you, because we're going to do a demo of Photoshop. Okay. So let's power up my VM. And the first thing that I'll say about this VM is that there's no RemoteFX 3D video adapter assigned to this VM at this point in time. And what I'm going to do here is open an image in Photoshop that I want to apply some edits to. So There's no remote effects virtual GPU here. There's no hardware accelerated graphics. This is just software rasterization limited to OpenGL 1.1. And Photoshop is intrinsically an OpenGL application. The first thing you'll see is this error dialog that pops up saying, 3D features require a minimum 512 meg of video memory. So Derek mentioned before that this is one of the things that we've changed in Windows Server Next, is that we can actually configure the amount of video memory for the remote effects virtual GPU. And this is really to address these kinds of issues. But on top of that, I've dismissed that dialog. Now I've got another error that basically says that Photoshop doesn't like this display driver, and it's disabled a bunch of enhancements which use graphics hardware. It's disabled a lot of the OpenGL and OpenCL features. So, for example, if we expand this guy up, let's say I wanted to apply this adaptive wide-angle filter for this image. You know, again, I just get an error. It's not supported. Okay, so that being the case, let's just power off this VM, and let's add the RemoteFX virtual GPU to this VM, and we'll see what happens with Photoshop. So as Derek mentioned earlier, we can now configure the amount of dedicated video memory that's available. We've capped it at 1024 because while this is dedicated video memory for the VM, it's actually coming out of physical system memory, not GPU VRAM. As Derek kind of talked about in the slide earlier where he went through these different virtualization strategies, the power virtualization model doesn't physically partition GPU resources. So in our case, when we carve out 1024 meg of dedicated video memory, it's just system memory that we're dedicating to this VM instead. Okay. So we'll just power our VM back up now that we've added remote effects back. It's pretty impressive to see how quickly these VMs boot. And let's go back in and open that same image that I wanted to edit. Open with Photoshop. Okay, so no error dialogues. That's great. If we actually go into the preferences for Photoshop and look under performance, here you'll see that Photoshop's detected the remote effects virtual GPU, and it's said, yeah, we're going to use that. It's working. We're just going to go in here and change a couple of settings. But with this, it's a little hard to read some of this text down here, but Photoshop's telling us that because it's got the GPU there and it supports the features that it needs, it's been able to enable a whole bunch of additional filters and transformations within Photoshop. So I'm going to show you one of those in action. So one of the things that happens in photography, especially if you're using a wide-angle lens, is that you can get some distortion in the image. And you can see that here with some of the pillars that are curved. So we're going to use this adaptive wide-angle filter to clean some of that up. It's pretty simple to do. So all we do is just trace these lines along some of the curves on these pillars that are bent. It's starting to look a little bit better. Okay, let's get the roof as well. Okay, and then the floor. Yeah. Okay, so let's apply that. We've got a couple of little things here that we might want to try and clean up. So Photoshop has this fill feature that allows you to clean up some problems like that. So yeah, this is an example of what you can now do with the OpenGL and OpenCL capabilities that we've introduced with the RemoteFX vGPU. Now your users can actually use a great productivity app like Photoshop within the enterprise and within VDI. All right, so that's the next demo. I'll hand over to Derek for another demo.
So actually, before I start this, we work very close with Adobe to make sure that some of the performance characteristics that they look for in a virtual or essentially just in a graphics adapter, that we're able to provide those for them. So, you know, what Winston showed there was something we've worked very closely with Adobe, and even some of the performance goals we have, we're using some of Adobe's tests to actually make sure that you can distinctly see with the CPU the performance you get, with your graphics adapter the performance you get. And you know, for some of the tests that we're seeing, you know, we're almost 15 to 30 times better than just a CPU. So there really is some collaboration that we've had there. Another vendor that we've also reached out to for this engagement, and this is through some of our partners and customers that have given us feedback, is Esri. Esri has, this application is ArcGIS Pro. It's been out in beta, they've had multiple beta releases over the year, and this is their pre-release version. But this is a GIS application which people use to, actually not people, like organizations like governments, the FBI, or even local counties and local governments use to create maps. They gave us a data set that they actually use for performance testing as well. So if any of you from Philadelphia, you should be familiar with some of the images that we'll see here. But essentially, this application does both modes, DX and OpenGL. What I have here in the banner, in the viewport, as you can see, is you can observe essentially the rendering that's happening here. So, you know, as I do different transitions, you should be able to see the rendering in terms of frames per second, what the application is capable of doing, depending on the adapter. But you'll also observe that this really is a heavy data set from the index, vertex, buffers, and textures that you can see that are actually loaded in memory. Okay, and that really, even as you see it try to do some rendering, that should give you a really good idea that this really isn't a flimsy, you know, kind of data set that we're using for our performance testing. And further, you know, I'm also running this off this small device, but we do run this on a K2 and some really high-end graphics cards. And so you can imagine the performance just scales dramatically when you move to GPUs that are designed to do this type of workload. So essentially how this application works is, you know, you can be building a map, and you can essentially kind of draw different you know, you can add different things as you're drawing a map. So one really good application that I saw when I went for their conference was governments that do 911 calls. And let's say if it's, you know, in Manhattan and someone fires a gun, they're quickly able to figure out with GPS what's in that location, if there's a fire hydrant, you know, if they could essentially deploy an ambulance there, what type of conditions would be. So, you know, people take these GIS maps and kind of, you know, build on top of them. So just to show you what the performance is like, assuming I was building this map, I'll kind of move between different scenes, and what you'd observe is how smooth the rendering and performance is around here. And once again, you can observe, you know, from a rendering perspective, we're getting over 60 frames per second here. So this really shows you, you know, with a really heavy data set like this and the type of environment we're running, what you can expect. This small circle here shows that, if you can see, yep, that rendering is still happening. And so this should give you a really good idea of at least some of the DX performance improvements that we've made. And just maybe to finish this off, we can just do another last transition here for you to see. So this really shows you that, you know, just in terms of the quality of the rendering, you know, how true it is for what Esri was expecting to happen. Okay, so the beauty of this application is it does both modes. So it does both OpenGL and DX. So what I'll do is, since you've seen how it's rendering in DX mode, to show you what it looks like in OpenGL, I'm just going to switch switch it to OpenGL. And what the application essentially is doing now is essentially switching the API model that it's using and loading essentially the over 1 gig of data into all those textures into memory, and rendering the scene. So as you can see, this is the same scene that we saw with DX, but now rendered in OpenGL. And similar to any other vendor out there, Esri, this is a new, brand new application for them. So they had the same needs to be able to have different APIs that they can support with one application, and not having to rewrite it for different platforms, right? So as you can see here, you get the same performance for what you'd see with DX, and I can do the same thing and kind of just move it around with this animation that they have. Now, typically people wouldn't do this, but Esri actually advised us that going through this type of bookmarking and rendering kind of tests and making sure that you can do a flyover really can allow you to understand what the experience would be. So. All right, so that should give you a good idea. And now I'll do the benchmarking.
Do you want to do, should we just do Google Earth real quick?
Yeah.
I think we have time.
Okay, so we have time. So Google Earth is another application that does both OpenGL and DX. And I think we mentioned this before, but some applications do what's called whitelisting. And what that means is they would essentially interrogate Windows and say, well, tell me which adapter is there. And they have a whitelist essentially that say, well, if it's this adapter, then enable it for these type of APIs. So in this case, Google Earth does the same. However, they leave it up to you in the regard if you want to run it in OpenGL mode, they give you that soft stop.
It's actually a little bit funny because Google hasn't realized that Microsoft has something called Warp, OpenGL software rasterization, and OpenGL paravirtualized hardware acceleration. So their error dialogue there is a little bit messed up. But when Derek goes through the scenario here, it's very clear that OpenGL rendering of Earth is hardware accelerated.
Yeah. So as you can see, it's super smooth, and we can zoom in to any type of address here.
Fear of Barcelona.
Yeah.
Try that. First one, yeah.
Not the first one.
Yeah. That'll do.
Yeah, and so you can see just what the experience would be like in OpenGL mode for this application. So the rendering, what we were really looking for here is what does the rendering look like, because that translates to the experience that an end user would have, and similar to Of course, Google Earth and ArcGIS are the same type of GIS type applications, with ArcGIS being more widely deployed in terms of what users want. But however, it's the same experience that you'd observe here. Okay. All right. And of course, I could switch as well to DirectX mode for this. Click apply. It'll tell me I need to restart the application. I'll close it up. I'll start it again. This time, of course, there is no error in regard to the graphics adapter, but the experience, as you can see, is 100% identical to what you'd get with OpenGL. Is that the first one?
Yeah.
All right. So, we can do the same thing, and you can observe that the performance with DX and OpenGL in terms of rendering and how the image quality looks is 100% the same. All right? Okay. Yeah. All right, so we can move to Valley now. All right. Yep. Yeah, I'll close it. All So the next demo, what we'll show now is a benchmarking application, and we'll need the sound for the demo machine. So this application is created by this company called Unigen, and it's a very good benchmarking application. What they really build these benchmarks for is to simulate what it would look like if you're designing a game and what you'd expect to happen. Now this, I'll just start running this, but what you'll observe for this application, we're gonna run it in DX mode. Is the sound on?
Good. Okay.
But I'll just let it run. It actually makes sense for you to observe this running for you know, a few moments. And I'll turn on the benchmarking so you can see what the render experience is.
So this is actually supposed to be quite a taxing benchmark for a GPU. And we can say that you know, we are running this on we are power virtualizing an Intel HD integrated GPU. So it's not exactly a high-end gaming class rig. You know, the performance is, you know, running roughly 30 FPS, and that's pretty equivalent to what you would see if you were running at bare metal.
Yeah. So really, you know, if you played any games, you know that rendering shadows and lights and, you know, every single leaf, as you can see here, and the tessellation that's happening is really a taxing kind of, you know, GPU thing, like the clouds and everything here. So this really is mostly just an illustration of the type of performance that we've been targeting with our implementation. And
you got to remember, this is remoting over remote desktop protocol.
So, yeah. Okay. So I think that should be good enough here. So I'll quit there. We'll go back to the presentation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just want to move forward a bit. Okay, so that was the last demo. I just want to talk a little bit about what's next for the rest of the Windows Server next release timeframe. So obviously for us, you know, we're not done with the release yet. And so we're in this mode of continuous improvement at the moment. And what we'd really love for you guys to do is, if you're interested in trying this out, download the technical preview, try it out with some, in particular, OpenGL applications or, you know, any business applications that you're interested in, and give us some feedback. We'd really love to hear from you and find out ways that we can improve and, basically do the right thing for you guys. However, we still have a little bit of feature work to do in terms of, you know, RDP and our encoding pipeline. We have some optimizations to do between our handoff from render to capture and encode. So there's a little bit of work left there, but you know, we still have a bit of time before RTM, which is still rapidly approaching. And overall, just improving RDP experience. We're doing a lot of work with our codecs, you know, within the RDP team. And, you know, in some future updates, you'll start to, future technical preview updates, you'll really start to see some of the payoff for the investments that we're making in that space as well. All right. So that actually brings us to the end of the main content. I just got to have a couple of slides to go through here. You've probably seen these in all of the sessions. Here are some standard resources that you can download, find out more about the session. In terms of the enterprise mobility track resources, you know, here are some other links that perhaps you can have a look at. The desktop virtualization link is probably pretty useful, especially for this session. And most importantly, we'd love it if you guys would fill out the evaluation form and give us some feedback, either on the session today or about, you know, what you think about remote desktop or graphics virtualization. We'd really love to hear from you. And so this is the session evaluation QR code. So, all right, at this point, if there are any questions, feel free to ask. Yeah. Benefits concerning Link? No. The remote desktop team hasn't done anything in particular there, but Link is obviously continuing to improve. We were talking a little bit earlier. One of the issues that we have with remote desktop in particular is around USB remoting for USB devices, and especially things like webcams can be a little bit challenging in terms of performance, but that's definitely something that we're interested in looking at a little bit more, seeing how we can improve. Yeah. Thanks. Any other questions? All right. Well, Derek and I will be here for a few more minutes. If you have some question that you don't feel comfortable asking in the broader forum, feel free to stop by and say hi or just introduce yourself. We'd love to talk to you. Okay. Yep. Thanks, everyone.